The Tolkien Road, Episode 243, Sauron Defeated, Part 2. Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, Episode 243. Greta, what's up?
Hey. What is up? Oh, gosh. I should have prepared something.
Well, I'm not surprising you with that question at this point.
I know, which is why I'm doubly embarrassed that I have no good response. But okay. I guess the huge.
All right.
Yeah, how about you?
The huge.
Cool.
That works for me, too.
Aight.
So, on this episode, we are continuing our journey through the History of Middle-Earth series as we examine the second half of Volume 9, Sauron Defeated, which is the fourth and final volume focused on the textual history of The Lord of the Rings. So, that is le plan, as they say.
Sounds good.
Before we get started, we'd like to give a shout-out to our patrons. Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Lise Yu, Andrew T., John R., and Ms. Anonymous.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you all so much.
Yeah.
And every one of y'all should head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road and become a patron. Sign up and get cool perks like audio recordings of my two books, Tolkien's Requiem and Tolkien's Overture. So head on over to patreon.com/Tolkien Road and check it out. iTunes. Subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Got a few more ratings in, so we're getting close to 300 over there. So give us head on over there and help us get to 300 by the next episode. So we're kind of coming in about 4.5 star rating, so we want to see that, you know, trending up towards that 5, almost indistinguishable, right? Almost indistinguishable from that 5 star rating. So do it. Yeah. Let's do it, people.
Please.
And it's time for the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5 for all those watching us on YouTube. All right? So
all right.
Here we go.
Here we go.
3, 2, 1. There we go. Nice.
Awesome.
Got to make sure you get that hand all the way in there next time, though, Greta.
I was really trying hard this time.
Maybe you should do it with your, even though you would normally.
My left hand.
Just so it's easier to get it in there, you know?
Should we do it again?
Yeah, I think that's good enough for now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
I'm a perfectionist, and now I'm uncomfortable.
All right, we can do it again. All right.
Thanks.
3, 2, 1. Whoops. There you go. Nice.
Nice. Okay.
So you got a bonus.
A bonus Air 5.
So UT can be a part of the weekly Tolkien Road Air 5. Just head on over to our YouTube channel where this episode is posted. And while you're at it, subscribe and click the notify bell for our channel. Leave us a comment. Look at some, you know, past episodes. Leave comments over there. And you can also check out the rest of our video library on YouTube while you're over there as well. So we're past 600 subscribers over there, and we want to get to 1,000 as quickly as possible. So make sure you subscribe, right? Just takes a second to head on over there and subscribe to YouTube. Even if you're subscribed to us somewhere else on another channel, subscribe to us over there because that's where you can watch us. And you know, we want to start doing some fun stuff like live streaming over there and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So
eventually. Yeah.
So yeah.
Cool.
All right, stick around to the end of the episode for correspondence. Greta, you ready to defeat Sauron Defeated?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be.
All right,
let's do it.
Do it.
Yes.
On the last episode, we looked at the first part of Sauron Defeated, which essentially completes our survey of the history of Lord of the Rings. On this episode, we're going to look at parts 2 and 3 of Sauron Defeated, which focus on the Notion Club papers and the drowning of Anadune. As a reminder, the title Sauron Defeated has a dual meaning. First, it refers to the late Third Age defeat of Sauron with the destruction of the Ring, and second, it refers to the earlier defeat of Sauron as part of the downfall of Numenor. So let's take these two parts one at a time. All right, so what are the Notion Club papers? Greta, got any guesses as to what the Notion Club papers are?
I remember that Marilyn sent us an email about this.
She did.
She did.
Recently.
Yes, and I believe the name. Okay, I don't know that I'm answering your question, but I remember the word notion is like another form or a translation of inklings.
Well, yeah, it's another word for inkling. Yeah.
Yep, and that's all I remember.
Okay, well, that's pretty good. You know,
okay.
So
thanks.
And actually, that kind of gives a little clue to what this is all about. Music plays a massive role in Tolkien's Legendarium, And on his new album, Eternal Flame, musical artist Blind Maisie has composed an album 100% derived from the stories of Middle-earth. Eternal Flame is a multi-genre original soundtrack inspired by the profound emotions of The Silmarillion, The Lord of the Rings, and The Hobbit. Ranging from orchestra-themed songs to euphoric piano, Blind Maisie brings his own magical melodies to bear on Tolkien's myths. Check it out now! Just sit back, put your headphones on, and let the music of the Ainur flood your headspace. Eternal Flame by Blind Maisie is now out on all major streaming platforms. Visit blindmaisie.com today to embark on a new Tolkien-inspired musical adventure. Once again, that's blindmaisie.com. So in a July 1946 letter to Stanley Unwin, Tolkien wrote the following. 146, here we go. He wrote, "I have in a fortnight of comparative leisure round about last Christmas written three parts of another book, taking up in an entirely different frame and setting what little had any value in the Inchoate Lost Road." Gonna have to look that word up. "Which I had once the impudence to show you. I hope it is forgotten. And other things beside. I hope to finish this in a rush, but my health gave way after Christmas. Rather silly to mention it till it is finished. But I am putting The Lord of the Rings, the Hobbit sequel, before all else, save duties that I cannot wriggle out of." All right. So first of all, got to look up what that word, I-N-C-H-O-A-T, because every time I see that word, I wonder what it means and how to pronounce it. All right, here we go.
Inchoate.
There we go. I feel like we've even done that one on this show before.
We may have.
Adjective. Just begun and so not fully formed or developed. Rudimentary.
Rudimentary.
Inchoate.
Almost so, like incomplete. Like inchoate.
Yes. Indeed. Yeah. So this was something, 1946, this is something that came in the middle of really you could argue even towards the end of Tolkien like drafting Lord of the Rings, right? It would actually be several more years before it came out, but he was kind of getting close to the end of at least the first draft of Lord of the Rings at this point. Essentially, the Notion Club papers are a reworking of what began in the late 1930s as The Lost Road. As you'll recall from episode 238, The Lost Road was a time travel story that Tolkien began composing in the late 1930s. It is most significant because it serves as the first writings on the subject of Numenor.
So is this the one with the lost cottage of
No. Play? This is The Lost Road. So this is the one we looked at on episode 238. And it's volume 5 of The History of Middle-earth, right?
Okay.
And it actually, it's kind of one of these things that Tolkien started writing right before he started writing Lord of the Rings. So what that means is that with the Notion Club papers, Tolkien begins to take up the story of Numenor once again after a long hiatus and on the other side of composing Lord of the Rings, right? So with The Lost Road, we got the first inklings, the first notions of Numenor, right? With the Notion Club papers, he's coming back to that legend of Numenor, and he's starting to develop it a little more. However, with the Notion Club papers, you get this really extensive frame narrative, right? And we'll talk about that in just a second. On this note, it's interesting to remember that with The Lost Road, Numenor originally played little to no role in the Middle-earth legendarium. However, with the Notion Club papers being composed late in the writing of Lord of the Rings, we can start to see how the legend of Numenor came to be introduced into the history of Middle-earth, right? It's interesting because, you know, we start out, if you kind of look at the grand scheme of things, Tolkien early on composes the stories of the First Age, right? That's kind of what he's focused on in the early part of his adult life. He writes The Hobbit, not even intending it really to be part of that world, and he includes a few little references to other things, and that's the late 30s. That leads to The Lord of the Rings and this development of this Third Age, you know, mythology that he then starts to connect back to the First Age, and then with The Lost Road, he picks up the legend of Numenor, and that becomes the big legend of the Second Age, right?
Gotcha. Okay.
And so it all kind of came together in this roundabout way, over time. So over several decades, really. Now, what about the title? So we talked about the title just a minute ago. Well, it's essentially to the frame narrative of the story Tolkien envisioned. What did I mean to say there? Now, what about the title? It's essentially the frame narrative of the story Tolkien envisioned, right? Okay, so...
Are you talking about the title?
I didn't write that down correctly. Sorry. So I'm trying to figure out what the heck I was trying to say right there. But the Notion Club refers to the greater frame narrative that surrounds the Legend of Numenor. Because you're like, what could be kind of a more boring, as opposed to the Legend of Numenor, it's like the Notion Club papers. I mean, that sounds like, that sounds like something that is, part of a scientific symposium or something like that, right? It's like, it's like, just doesn't grab your attention.
No.
Right?
So you're talking about the title Notion Club Papers. That's right. What you're talking about. Okay.
Right. So early in the text, we find this note when it comes to the Notion Club Papers. These papers have a rather puzzling history. They were found after the summer examinations of 2012 on the top of one of a number of sacks of waste paper in the basement of the examination schools at Oxford by the present editor, Mr. Howard Green, the clerk of the schools. They were in a disordered bundle, loosely tied with red string. The outer sheet, inscribed in large Lombardic capitals, Notion Club Papers, attracted the notice of Mr. Green, who removed them and scrutinized them. Discovering them to contain much that was to him curious and interesting, he made all possible inquiries without result. All right.
2012?
Yeah. So, yeah. Interesting, huh?
Yeah.
So, what we're saying is, it opens. This is the very first line of kind of the first version of the Notion Club papers. And it opens by basically saying, these are a bunch of papers that were found on a stack of waste paper after summer examinations in the year 2012.
Okay, I'm gonna
And Tolkien was writing this in the mid 40s.
Okay, that's my confusion because yeah. Tolkien has passed away by this point. Yes.
Oh yeah.
So,
so this is supposed to be like a future thing, right? That this is, and for Tolkien, he was writing this as like, it. Remember, okay. So let me go back to the Lost Road for a second, okay?
Okay.
Lost Road. Do you remember what inspired the writing of The Lost Road?
No.
Okay. It was a kind of it was sort of a agreement between him and C.S. Lewis. They've been talking about the kinds of stories they wanted to see written, and
oh, it was a time travel story.
Lewis was like, "I'll write this." You write the space travel story, Lewis, yes. And I'll write the time travel story. Right.
That's right.
So Lewis wrote the space travel story, which became Out of the Silent Planet,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And Tolkien's time travel story was supposed to be The Lost Road, right? But it never really kind of reached completion.
Okay? It's all coming back to me now.
Yeah, so that's where this whole thing comes in. So, but the time travel, it's interesting. So what you're going to see is that 2012 is like when these papers were found, but they actually were written. Like in the late 20th century, okay? Tolkien's writing this. So in other words, there's several layers to the frame, right? There's several layers to the frame of all of this.
Okay.
Okay. Let me explain this to you. I wrote here that it's actually a double frame. Well, let me read another quote real quick before I get to this.
I'm confused.
It's all going to make sense to you in just a second.
Okay.
The minutes or reports covered probably about 100 meetings or nights during the years of last century, approximately 1980 to 1990. It is, however, not the least curious fact about these papers that no such club appears ever to have existed. Though certain resemblances are inevitable between a group of imaginary academic persons and their real contemporaries, no such persons as those here depicted, either with such names or such offices or such tastes and habits, can be traced in the Oxford of the last generation or of the present time. All right, so, somebody basically in 2012 or after is giving a report on these mysterious papers that were found for this thing called the Notion Club, and they're apparently minutes of a group that met at Oxford University in the late 20th century, and but they can't actually find, they don't know whether they're authentic or not, because they can't find any record of these people ever having existed, right?
The people mentioned in the right. papers?
Okay. Yeah. And then the papers themselves, you're going to find, are like, involve their discussions of dreams about an ancient civilization, right? And that's where Numenor kind of comes into play.
Okay.
Right? So what's really interesting about this is you have a double narrative within the Notion Club papers, but then if you include Christopher's, it's funny because it's like, it's almost like somebody's writing about the Notion Club papers within the Notion Club papers, like Lewis, or like Christopher Tolkien writes about his father's manuscripts within the history of Middle Earth, right? Mm. So there's like three or four like levels of, frame. It's very meta. This is a very meta sort of thing.
Probably why I'm confused.
Yeah. Well, my brain was well prepared for this today, just on accident, because I watched a 4-hour thing on the meaning of Twin Peaks.
I can't believe you watched that whole thing. That's crazy.
Well, I'm able to watch it while I work, because I can kind of listen in, to a lot of, to it on YouTube. But I watched a 4-hour explanation attempted explaining what Twin Peaks means. And so if you have any familiarity with that TV show, that it's very complicated and has very, very many layers of just like what the heck's going on to it. So anyway, my brain apparently was well disposed to understand the levels
of
framing.
Well disposed to meta.
Yes.
Yes.
Well disposed to meta. I like that. Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So sum it all up. These papers were found on a trash heap in 2012.
Okay, can I just stop real quick?
Hold on, let me finish summing it up.
Okay.
And then we can come back, okay?
Okay.
These papers were found on a trash heap in 2012. They're the minutes of a mysterious discussion group from sometime in the late 20th century, and they will contain the stories of Numenor.
Okay, I don't understand. If they were written in the 40s...
Mm-hmm. They're not written in the 40s. Tolkien wrote this in the 40s. It's a fictional story. The fictional story that he wrote
in the
40s...
No, I understand, but he wrote it in the 40s.
Right.
Okay, so these papers have been around since the 40s,
mm-hmm.
and they just happened to be discovered on a trash heap in 2012. Like, where were they all this time?
That's the mystery.
That's so bizarre. That's really bizarre.
Yeah, well, that's the mystery.
But that's like, I mean, when did Tolkien die? Remind me, what year?
73.
Okay, so he's been dead for almost 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
40 years.
Right. But he's not a part of the story, right?
I understand.
He's the author of the story.
But how did they manage to get lost and found in this weird way?
Well, I don't know, because we haven't read the entire Notion Club papers yet.
Okay, but the mystery is in the papers?
I mean,
the answer to the mystery is in the papers?
This is an incomplete thing, right? So I don't know if he was going to answer that question at some point,
okay.
or if this was just supposed to provide a convenient mysterious frame for the rest of the story, right?
Okay. It's just weird that they were that they were lost track of for so long.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. I'm done.
Really? Are you?
I am.
No,
I am.
My
brain is
sure.
clearly not disposed to meta today, so I apologize.
No, it's all good. It's definitely a little confusing. But I will say I find it kind of fascinating. Little aside, I just have to say I love how we find with Tolkien, continual reference to his creative stories being jotted down in exam books or on the backs of papers to be graded. Even within the Notion Club papers, it's like, it was after the summer examinations of 2012, we found these papers on a stack of waste papers at Oxford University, right? I feel like Tolkien was trying to tell us something even there, more so than grading tests is boring, right? Maybe
I'd rather be doing something else.
And it's like, maybe there's better use for all this knowledge than just kind of the academic use of it,
than just the memorization and regurgitation of it.
Yeah. Maybe it's supposed to transform us in some way.
Oh,
right?
Okay. It's very Tolkienian.
Yeah.
How did they know that they were, that he wrote them?
That he wrote the Notion Club papers?
Yes.
Because they were in his writings.
In his handwriting?
Yeah.
But it doesn't have his name anywhere.
Well, not on this cover here, but I mean.
Okay.
Yeah. It was just in it. I don't know. I'm sure it's in here somewhere because it's a pretty long section, but
yeah.
I didn't give the background on like the manuscripts or whatever. So.
Gotcha.
You want to call that into question?
No, I'm just wondering if this could have been a prank of some kind.
It's too long and complex to have been a prank. Okay. I just don't. Like, you think somebody, like, wrote this and put it in there?
I'm not saying that I think that. I'm just kind of, you know, throwing out the possibility.
I'm just saying, do you think it was Tolkien's prank, or do you think it was somebody else's prank?
Somebody else's prank. Trying to make us think it was Tolkien.
I don't think that's true. I mean, remember, this stuff luckily would have been written down in a lot of handwriting, which would have been similar to Tolkien's handwriting.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
Somebody would have had to go really far out of their way to pull this off.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
Yeah. All right. It should be noted that it appears that we are dealing with a strange mix of truth and fiction. For example, the actual book, Out of the Silent Planet, is referred to in the text. But the characters are too young to be actually the Inklings. Most of them, there's actually like a little table early on in the Notion Club, which gives the birth dates of a lot of the people who were members of the Notion Club and like gives a little short bio of each of them. And most of them were born in either the late 20s or the 30s, even one who was born in the 40s, right? Mm. So, or a couple that were born in the 40s. So these, you know, of all of these figures, like, it seems pretty clear they're writing sometime in like the 70s or the 80s, right? But even then, I guess part of what's going on here is there's not only like the legend of Numenor that gets worked into this, but there's just kind of like they have these really interesting discussions and who are these people and where did these papers come from, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
yeah.
I like the concept. I mean, I really do. I like the concept of the story and, you know, trying to, you know, the mystery of like trying to figure out where these things,
so basically these things came from. There's characters that kind of travel back in time to a place that we come to know as Numenor.
I don't know if I'd say they travel back in time, at least not, I mean, maybe they do. I haven't read this closely enough yet, but from what I gather, one or many of them have dreams that they're trying to kind of work out and figure out what's going on with these dreams. And, and so, you know,
and
there's
Numenor
they kind of discuss that at the Notion Club. Right.
And the dreams involve Numenor or what we come to know is
so,
Numenor.
So let's get to that. Right.
Okay.
And so we get to Numenor through their discussions. And so I'm going to read a little snippet that will kind of give you some of that.
Okay.
All right. And this is one of the Notion Club members talking. There are good dreams, apparently of the sort I mean, quoted in books. My own were not so good. The ones I used to remember when awake, that is. They were only significant fragments, more statically pictorial, seldom dramatic, and usually without figures of humane shape. Though I sometimes retained the memory of significant words or sentences without any scenery, such as, I am full of sovereign remedies. That seemed a wise and satisfactory utterance. I have never yet found out why. Here are some of my fragments of this kind. There is the empty throne on the top of a mountain. There is a green wave, white-crested, fluted and scallop-shaped, but vast, towering above green fields, often with a wood of trees, too. That has constantly appeared. I saw several times a scene in which a wide plain lay before the feet of a steep ridge on which I stood. The opposing sky was immense, rising as a vertical wall, not bending to a vault, ablaze with stars strewn almost regularly over all its expanse. That is an omen or presage of catastrophe. A dark shape sometimes passes across the sky, only seen by blotting out the stars as it goes. Then there is the tall, gray, round tower on the sheer end of the land. The sea cannot be seen, for it is too far below, too immeasurably far. But it can be smelt. And over again, in many stages of growth and many different lights and shadows, three tall trees, slender, foot to foot on a green mound, and crowned with an embracing halo of blue and gold. And what do you think they all mean? Asked Frankly. It took me quite a time, far too long, to explain the very minor story of the librarian, said Raymer. I could not embark tonight on even one of the immense and ramified legends and cosmogonies that these belong to. Not even on the green wave? said Loudham. But Raymer did not answer him. Are the blessed trees religious symbolism? Asked Jeremy. No, not more than all things mythical are. Not directly. But one does sometimes see and use symbols, directly religious, and more than symbols. One can pray in dreams or adore. I think I do sometimes, but there is no memory of such states or acts. One does not revisit such things. They're not really dreams. They're a third thing. They belong somewhere else. to the other anchorage, which is not the body, not to the body, and differ from dreams more than dream from waking. So that's just a little snippet of this. There's a, you know, a good bit, but I mean, it's vastly different sort of writing from Lord of the Rings.
Yes. Yeah.
But at the same time, there's a lot of like just conversations in Lord of the Rings, long conversations in Lord of the Rings.
That's true.
And I like this, that they're all kind of together trying to figure out what's going on with these things. Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they're all having similar dreams.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Hmm.
So it's through these dreams and the discussion of them that we come to know the story recognizable to us as that of Numenor. Though it's in very like kind of pictorial, you know, like snippet little fashion.
Okay.
So there's a lot here about the Notion Club papers, and honestly, I could see us doing a deep dive on this in the not too distant future. It's very different from Lord of the Rings, but the discussions seem, from what I've read, to be pretty fascinating. So okay. I'm going to definitely bookmark this one and hopefully come back to it fairly soon. Try to give it a good close read myself here soon.
All right. So. Cool.
All right, and then the other part is called the Drowning of Anadune. So I'm not going to spend too much time on this one, but I will say this. So what we have with the Drowning of Anadune section is several different texts that are fairly recognizable as precursors to what we now know as Akalabeth. What I found most interesting about this part was section 5, entitled The Theory of the Work. In that section, we find this note from Tolkien. Evil reincarnates itself from time to time, reiterating, as it were, the fall. There were Enkeladim once on earth, but that was not their name in this world. It was Eladai in Numenor and Eldar. After the first fall, they tried to befriend men and teach them to love the earth and all things that grow in it. But evil also was ever at work. There were false Eldar, counterfeits and deceits made by evil, ghosts and goblins, but not always evil to look at. They terrified men, or else deceived and betrayed them, and hence arose the fear of men for all the spirits of the earth. Men awoke first in the midst of the great Middle Earth, Europe and Asia, and Asia was first thinly inhabited before the dark ages of great cold. Even before that time, men had spread westward and eastward as far as the shores of the sea. The Enkeladim, Eladai, withdrew into waste places or retreated westward. The men who journeyed westward were in general those who remained in closest touch with the true Eladai, and for the most part they were drawn west by the rumor of a land in or beyond the western sea which was beautiful, and was the home of the Eladai where all things were fair and ordered to beauty. This was so, for there was a great island in the ocean where the Eladai had first awakened, when the world was made. That is complete and ready for their operations. Thus it is that the most beautiful legends containing truths arose, of Oreads, Dryads, and Nymphs, and of the Cleos Alfar. At length, men reached the western shores of the great lands and were halted on the shores of the sea. The shock and awe and longing of that meeting has remained in their descendants ever since, and the great sea and the setting sun has been to them the most moving symbol of death and of hope for escape. Hmm. And then in the margin of the text of this page, which ends at this point, Tolkien wrote, "The Almighty, even after the fall, allowed an earthly paradise to be maintained for a while, but the Eladai were bidden to withdraw thither as men spread, if they would remain as they had been, otherwise they would fade and diminish." So, and there's a lot more than that there, but, you know, within this, a lot of what is in this section is pretty recognizable as early versions of Akalabeth, but there is some interesting writing of that nature also in this section that I think will be very interesting to dive into, you know, over the next months, years, and become more familiar with as we understand, like, kind of the genesis of the Numenorean legend and where Tolkien's mm-hmm. mind was mm-hmm. and thinking about, you know, where the Tron Prime lands. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so I love how we get more about the background of men here, even if its canonicity is in question. To be sure, what we get doesn't seem too far off from what we know about the pre-Beleriand history of men from the Legendarium. And then it should also be noted that Tolkien did a lot of work to develop the language, the Andunaic language during this period, so there's a good bit of information on that in this volume as well. So, and that's the language of Numenor. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay, cool.
So that is Sauron Defeated Part 2 in a nutshell, a little survey of that for you. So, cool. Any questions, Greta?
No, that's good.
All right.
Yeah, good overview.
Great. All yes. right. Well, let's look at a little bit of correspondence.
Okay.
So first off, we have a note from Sean C. From May 24th. Sean writes, a few episodes back, John mentioned the similar title of one of the Lost Tales to the Led Zeppelin song Over the Hills and Far Away. As meta as it may be, having Zeppelin nearly tie into a lost tale that was unpublished at the time, more than likely Tolkien was referencing a song that he was already familiar with from his time in the military during World War I. The song Over the Hills and Far Away is a traditional song of the British Army, often associated with recruiting, that is from the last of the 17th or early 18th century. It was popular by the time of Queen Anne's War and was used during the Seven Years' War and the American Revolution. It was brought back to popularity in the 90s as a theme song for the Sharp movies, starring Sean Bean, another Lord of the Rings tie-in. As a British Army officer, Tolkien would no doubt be familiar with the song, and that is most likely the inspiration for the title.
Hmm.
Thanks for all the great content, Sean. Yeah, thanks, Sean. I never really imagined that it was necessarily like... Well, certainly that Tolkien named his story after the Led Zeppelin song, because obviously they came decades later. Right. I wondered, though, because Led Zeppelin is known for tying in, for having tied in their music sometimes mm-hmm. to Tolkien's Legendarium, right. Maybe there was a connection there, but that wouldn't really seem possible because... they wrote that song in like the early 70s and the History of Middle Earth first volume didn't come out until the early 80s. So there was a good decade unless they had some kind of insider knowledge,
right,
but
some foreknowledge.
It doesn't really seem like, Tolkien and, you know, Robert Plant were like, hanging out all the time. It doesn't really seem like he would have been into that scene. Tolkien would have been very into that scene given what we know, his feelings on like the Beatles and that kind of thing from, even earlier. So, but that's definitely interesting. I kind of want to find a recording of
the British Army song,
the British Army version.
Yeah.
So I feel like somebody else mentioned something similar to this as well, like another poem, in a previous piece of correspondence, but I can't remember exactly when that might've been. So, anyway, but thanks, Sean. Thanks for, dropping some knowledge on us.
Mm-hmm.
Appreciate it.
Indeed.
All right. Next up, we have a note from Jennifer, longtime listener, longtime correspondent Jennifer. Jennifer left a couple of comments on our most recent episode on the website. She said this, Trotter was originally a hobbit, but he kept the name Trotter until very late in the writing. Totter? Trotter? Trotter who? My take on Doctor Who. And so I had no idea what that meant. I asked my son, like, Doctor Who, what is this? I sent that note to him, and I was like, what does this mean in the context of Doctor Who? And he's like, oh, I don't really know. You know, I've only watched like 10 seasons of Doctor Who. And I'm like, you've watched 10 seasons of Doctor Who? How? And then I was like, oh yeah, Doctor Who's like got like a bajillion seasons. So anyway, he didn't understand. But fortunately, Jennifer wrote back afterward and said this. It is based on an in-show joke that has been used since the very first episode from 1963. There is no question mark in the show's title, all caps. But it has been used in various ways throughout the show's history. In New Who, it has been used literally as a question, since the Doctor never tells anyone his real name, with maybe one exception. Within the Doctor Who universe, it is said to be the oldest question in the universe, the question that must never be answered. I never truly understood that last part. So, that's interesting.
It's kind of meta.
Yeah, kind of meta. This has been a very meta episode.
Very meta. Even Sean used the word meta in his email.
Totally.
Guys,
craziness.
What's going on?
And it's all coming on this day that I watched this 4-hour thing on Twin Peaks again.
Almost like David Lynch's.
Yeah,
inspiring.
The spirit of David Lynch is within this episode. I don't know. None of this was intentional, but yeah. Twin Peaks was quite possibly the most meta show ever, you know, most meta show ever created. It's funny that Jennifer mentions the question that must never be answered, because that's kind of like the thesis of this video is that
Twin Peaks video.
Is that the TV show got ruined by answering the key question, right?
The question that should never be answered,
right? And when I was getting a little frustrated at you earlier, when you're like...
Oh, I didn't know you were getting frustrated at me.
I didn't. Oh, that's good. That means I didn't come off like too much of a jerk.
Oh, now you're going to get hate mail.
Well, that's fine. I always get hate mail. But I guess the reason I was because it's like you were asking this question of like, well, why can't he just tell? Like, it's almost like, why can't he just tell us where these papers came from? You know, why does it have to be this elaborate thing? And I'm like, because that's the mystery. That's the thing that makes it so interesting, right? In Twin Peaksian terms, that's the fish in the percolator, right?
Right.
That's like how it got there in the
but
first
see, that's
place.
That's also not. I enjoyed Twin Peaks, but you enjoyed it way more than I did, which means that I think you can just handle mystery much better than I can.
Well, I think we've always kind of known that about the two of us, is that I'm much more into like that's one of the, as I frequently say, one of the things that draws me to Tolkien most is the depth and the unending mystery of so many things within the Legendarium, right?
Mm-hmm.
He ties up some loose ends, but not all of them.
Right. And that just makes my head hurt.
Yeah.
I want it all answered. I want a nice little package tied with a bow.
Yeah.
And be like, here we go.
But don't you get like, it kind of make sense how like if you answered the like most fundamental question, that it kind of, it's the end, right? It, you're done.
That's true. There's nowhere to go from there.
Right.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right.
On one hand, that makes me think of Lost and like never really answering any of the questions of that show.
But see, that you didn't like that.
Well, I didn't, because I felt like they didn't answer. Like, I feel like you got to answer some things.
But
I also just kind of felt like they were just completely making it up as they went along with that. Like, there was no like underlying concept of what this is really all about. It's just like, okay, this is going well. Let's just keep the Shaggy Dog story going. All right. Anyway,
interesting. We digress.
Yes, but Jennifer, thank you for that.
Yes,
and
thank you
for educating us a little bit on the on some basic Doctor Who.
I haven't even seen one.
I've seen a few. The kid, I've like sat in with the kids watching a few episodes, you know, every once in a while. But they haven't really been into Doctor Who for the last several years.
Yeah.
It
was kind of a phase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I didn't know it was still going on.
Oh yeah, it's like one of the longest running TV shows.
That's
impressive. I think they like. It was on for a long time, then maybe went off the air, then came back a long time, a while ago, and has been on ever since. And, you know, so.
Interesting.
Yes, cool. Indeed. Yes, indeed. All right. And our last comment is from a longtime listener left on our YouTube channel. Here we go. And this is from, so he goes by Messianic Jiu-Jitsu on his YouTube channel.
Jew, so, spelled J-E-W.
Yeah, well, Messianic Jew, which is a,
yes.
Know, and then jitsu, so it's a play on jujitsu.
That's really clever. I like that.
And he says, much love, Tolkien Road fam, listening now. So
nice.
Yeah.
That's
so,
very cool.
Yeah, so.
I love that.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah,
Thanks for the love across the YouTube channels, and I hope you enjoyed the episode you listened to. So.
Or did he watch it?
Or that he watched. Or that he listened to.
And watched.
As he was doing something else, he was listening to it. But it was video.
But it was video, right? In the background.
Yeah.
There's so many different possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Word.
Cool.
All right. Well, we'd love to hear from all of you. TolkienRoadPodcast@gmail.com, TolkienRoad.com, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, etc. That's all for this episode. Thank you to our amazing patrons, especially the following: Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien,
Lee Sue,
Andrew T,
John R,
Ms. Anonymous,
Shannon S,
Brian O,
Emilio P,
Zeke F,
James A,
James L,
Chris L,
Chuck F,
Azia V,
Ish of the Hammer,
Teresa C,
David of Pints with Jack,
Jonathan D,
Eric S,
Joey S,
Eric B,
Johanna T,
Eric M,
Durenayer,
Robert H,
Paul D,
Jacob S,
and Julia.
As well as those celebrating their patron anniversary in May, Ms. Anonymous,
Joshua Y,
Donna S,
Rebecca R,
James R,
and Ty M.
Thanks, y'all.
Thank you, guys.
And thank you to everybody who's listening. We'll talk at you next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye, everybody.